I am a mom of a spicy one, and I was a spicy one, and I had a spicy one as a mother, and just had a lot of stuff that made parenting not very common sense for me. And so when I ran into tough spots with a really strong-willed child, and I have my own set of strong-willedness, I just didn't know intuitively what to do.
Welcome to another Enter the Chat episode of the Mom Force podcast, where a special guest answers your questions. And today we're talking about how to stay calm and parent on with Mary Van Geffen. Okay, before we get to the conversation with Mary, I want to know how you chatbook. Are you in the trenches of early motherhood and intentionally documenting the messy kitchen and bedtime routines? Or are you in the midst of raising teenagers and documenting your family's adventures? Or maybe you're a grandparent who loves receiving chatbooks in the mail to keep up with all of the activities of the little ones who live far away. Whatever it is, I want to hear about it. Send me a message at Vanessa Quigley over on Instagram, because I love seeing your stories and all of the beautiful books that you create. At Chatbooks, we are all about capturing everyday magic, no matter what your family looks like. I promise there are special moments in each chapter of your life worth holding on to. All right, now on to the episode. Welcome to the Mom Force, Mary.
Oh, it's so exciting to be here.
I'm so excited for our audience to get to know you better. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a parenting coach.
Well, I am a mom of a spicy one. And I was a spicy one, and I had a spicy one as a mother, and just had a lot of stuff that made parenting not very common sense for me. Mm-hmm. And so when I ran into tough spots with a really strong-willed child, and I have my own set of strong-willedness, I just didn't know intuitively what to do. And I knew that I was very drawn to sort of a child developmental way of parenting. And later that came to be called gentle parenting or conscious parenting or respectful parenting. It has many names, right? But It didn't come naturally to me. And so I needed to get a lot of support. And I needed someone who could help me parse out what is wrong with my child or what is wrong with me. And since then, I would change the question. That's not a very positive question to answer. Yeah. But at the time, I literally needed someone and they didn't exist. And so I began to find the answers for me, and then realized I want to reduce the number of children that grow up feeling like they are wrong and broken in some way. And you do that by helping moms not feel like they're wrong or broken and growing their skills. So it feels like important work to be the person I needed, 15 years ago.
Yeah, because moms get so little training. They send you home with this newborn with not even a manual. And then I found as I started raising my kids, I was doing what I thought worked with the way my parents raised me and trying to undo some of the things that I really didn't like. And, I have 7 kids. And so I kept doing the same thing with each kid. But guess what? Each kid is totally different. Some of them are spicy. Okay, so how do you describe that term, spicy ones? An image comes to my mind. Maybe a particular child comes to mind. But how did that term come about? And how do you describe it?
I just want to say there's no one I would rather get parenting advice from than someone who has had multiple children. I only have 2, and I'm blessed that they are so different that I can parse out on some level what is my influence and what has nothing to do with me. But I feel like often it's just funny how the people with no children or one child want to tell you what you're doing right or wrong. And you really don't know until you've seen a lot of different personalities and noticed that leadership skills work differently for different people. But anyway, spicy one for me comes out of the idea that there are so many negative labels for the stronger willed, more spirited children out there. And I wanted a label that acknowledges how it really is a tough assignment to have a child like that, who's sort of defiant and not easygoing, but to drop the judgment that makes them wrong. And so I would define a spicy one as somebody who learns through defiance and through their own personal failure. You can't just tell them how things go. They don't believe you until they feel it in their own body. They are more loyal to their own soul than to your agenda, which is really unusual because most children have an inherent need to be liked and connected with you. And the spicy one wants to be connected with you, but they're not going to give up their sovereignty to do that. So they're not super compliant. They have a high sense of justice, what is right and fair, but often will have different standards for other people than themselves. They love rules that apply to other people, but not to them. And they tend to be the loudest ones and the most emotional and the most sensitive. And, you know, many of them can have ADHD or a neurodivergent diagnosis. I do. But a lot of times what makes a child spicy is the resources that the parent has that's interacting with them. So you might have someone and be like, wow, what a spicy one. And I spend the weekend with them and I'm like, they're a blast. What are you talking about? There was no issues, right? So sometimes it's a little bit about what the mom's bringing to the table. Like, how much does she need perfection and how much control does she feel like she needs? And what is her tolerance for emotion and overstimulation? And is she lonely? You know, is she supported? And so there's a lot that goes into whether or not a child is a spicy one. And it's a little bit subjective.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Maybe it has more to do with the mom and the parenting style and what we're bringing to the table than it does the child. Well, as I listened to that really wonderful description, I realized I have a spicy side, and maybe it just comes with red hair, you know, that temperament. But I'm also very much a people pleaser. And I was the oldest in my family. I'm the oldest of 12. And so I felt this real responsibility to toe the line and set the example. And my husband is very much that way too. And I think we thought we were going to be raising kids to just be little mini-me's, you know, just we're going to do all the right things and they're all going to turn out like cookie cutter versions of what we think it looks and means to be a Quigley. But we got some spicy ones, some spicier than, and I saw this quote on your Instagram that really resonated with me. It said, "Very good moms can have wildly defiant children." Mm-hmm. And I love that so much. Can you talk to us about how do we separate our child's behavior from our worth as a mother? Because those tend to be so closely tied. And when we start to feel like we're a bad mom, it just, the stakes get higher and higher. And sometimes that spice just goes through the roof.
Yeah. And it's funny because there's not a lot of other callings in life where our identity is so wrapped up in the results, where the result is a human being. You know, I mean, I get it if you're an artist and you're like, I am totally responsible for this sculpture. And if you don't like it, maybe that means I'm a bad artist. But with motherhood, there is this kind of assumption that we have control, which we don't. This is a human being. And so there are obviously rhythms and structure and communication skills. There is so much we can do to make it more likely that there's a culture of cooperation and affection. But in the end, these are not remote control animatronics. These are human beings that are going to make their own choices. And once we can kind of accept our utter lack of control, we're in charge, but we're not always in control of them. We can be in control of ourselves. Yeah. But I think separating, a lot of times people will join my Mom's a Spicy Ones, which is my big signature 8-week course. And they have a goal, which is I want to get my child to be X, Y, and Z. And I have to kind of shift to be like, we'll see what happens there. Obviously, we want to move the needle to the more positive behaviors. But let's start with who do you want to be, regardless of how your child shows up? And before that, people see it almost as contingent. Well, if you behave, I can give you more positive feedback. And actually, we want to sort of separate out how they behave and our ability to give unconditional, high positive regard. And like, if you think about any addiction, because some of this is an addiction to control and to how we're perceived. Lord knows we want our neighbor to think, oh, she's a really good mom. I can tell because her child says please and thank you. And they don't assume and they don't open up my refrigerator when they're over. Like, there's all these little indicators that they've been parented well. But some of us, I would say about 20% of us, get a kid where we can do all the right things and this kid has to learn by getting kicked out of places, by banging their head against a wall. And they have different needs and a different nervous system. So, yeah.
So adopting that mindset of separating your worth from your child's behavior, that is an important first step. But then actually putting into practice like what that looks like. In your bio, it says, I'm all about helping you practice the spiritual discipline of staying calm, kind, and firm with your spirited powerhouse of a kid, even when they don't deserve it. So we've got some questions here from our community of some real specific instances where I can't wait to get your expertise on. But can you just tell us really quickly, like, what does that discipline look like?
Yeah, and it's funny because you're asking me what discipline looks like. But in my statement, I'm not really talking about disciplining children, which is important.
Yeah, no, and that's not what I'm talking about either. Okay. Just as a parent, like, we have to discipline ourselves. Like,
yes,
it starts with us. And so, you know.
And I'm couching that as actually a spiritual discipline.
Yeah.
Because like any great saint on a journey, there is a dying to self and a trying to open up to the mystery of something bigger than us. And there is no, I think, greater calling than practicing unconditional love.
Yeah.
And we didn't grow up that way, most of us, right? And so we think that we have to earn love, and if we have to act a certain way, and our child needs to act a certain way, and it's sort of a transactional kind of love. And when you get a spicy one who is bucking any kind of your leadership and who takes that special velvet touch, you begin to do the work of figuring out how you're going to love and delight in this kid, even when they are not acting loving or delightful. And that to me is sort of the crux of, you know, I don't know your faith, but that's what God's asking me to do, is to love my neighbor regardless of what I might think, how I feel about their politics or their voting or whatever. And I think about any kind of recovery program like Alcoholics Anonymous, the first step is admitting that you're powerless on some level. And this is, I know, hard for like listeners might be like, is this lady going to give us any tips, or she just wants to say that we can't control our kid and now we're raising a psychopath? So there is an art here, right? Nobody can judge your walk but you, because you know the personality you're dealing with and you know your own limitations. But it's finding that place in between walking on eggshells because you don't want the kid to lose it, which creates this kind of a weak-willed person that can't handle anything challenging, right? So you don't want to be walking on eggshells and avoiding upsetting them, but you also want to be thinking about the community at large and this whole, you know, recipe of what's best, what's the highest good right now? Do I want to hold this boundary, or do I need to flex because I'm noticing that this kid is severely depleted in their own kind of nervous system and will come back to learn this? So it's such an art. And it's not going to be, you always do this, you always do that, which is disappointing. People want formulas.
One answer. Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of, I know the most effective parenting is calm, kind, and firm. And often we're really good at one of them. Like, I was really good at being firm in the beginning. No, we are not doing that. And I didn't have a problem at all being in charge. But without kindness and without calmness, none of the lessons were being learned. I was kind of creating a fear-based and a real tumultuous environment. So identifying like, which one comes naturally to me? Oh, okay, I'm naturally calm. I don't need to worry about that. But kind and firm, maybe I'm afraid to upset someone, so I'm not real great at firm. But tinkering with those and thinking about how you might grow your skills, I think of them like a triangle. You kind of need all three.
So good. All right, let's hear what you got to say for some of our Mom Force community and some of the tumults that they're experiencing at home. I want to start with a question from Mary. She says, what should I do about tantrums in public with my 7-year-old? The smallest thing sets him off, and then the tantrums seem to last forever. It's embarrassing. Okay, we can all relate. We've been there. Yes. 2-year-old, 7-year-old. I've even had a 13-year-old throwing a tantrum. What advice do you have for Mary?
Get older and bigger, then it gets scary, you know. Mm-hmm. Although some of the kids that are represented on this call, you know, need a lot longer to mature in their ability to hold their anger in a respectful way. First, I just want to say, yeah, it is embarrassing. And I wish that the society at large was more tolerant of human development and how messy and just like watching an egg slowly get pecked at as a baby bird comes out. They're just covered in goop. It's ugly, right? And part of learning to not to get swept away by your emotions and your disappointment is having these tantrums and having a parent that can hold a calm space and still hold a boundary. And like, there are some kids out there that need like 3 tantrums a day for 4 years, right? To build up the inner fortitude to be able to handle being disappointed. You know, if we as parents have to try to avoid the tantrum, we are doing our child a disservice. Now, of course, nobody wants to be having this interaction in public, but it's really important if you do that you think of a couple things. One is, during a tantrum is not the time to teach a child anything. All of their receptors for taking in your influence are gone. Their body is just surveying to see, are they safe? And so they're looking at the way you're holding your face. They're looking at your hands. They can't really hear your words. So let's let go of trying to teach them anything. And number two, let's be really clear of what is our internal voice saying to ourselves. Are we saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe this kid is doing this? Or look, everybody must think I'm a bad mom. Are we parenting for others? And in doing that, are we telling ourselves some things that do not make us more resourceful and present for our kid? So deciding, if you have a kid that tantrums, and like, it's a pretty good chance, 50-50 chance, if you try to take them on a third errand, that kid's going to lose it. If you know that, well, you can do one less errand, and that's admirable, but maybe you need to do the errand. Then it's knowing up front, what are you going to say to yourself? What's my job here when this child is tantruming? Is it to get out of here as quickly as I can? I don't know. That's kind of up to each individual. Is it, I'm going to stay calm, even though they are, and that will be success. So like, defining what success is, rather than success is, I don't inconvenience anybody and there's no yelling. I don't think that's a possibility, right, for a lot of kids. So those are two thoughts. Another thought is that a tantrum is like literally the work of parenting. It would be like somebody who's in charge of making coffees is like really mad that someone came back and wants a refill. I mean, it's just part of the job is you're holding a safe space for kids being upset and being overwhelmed. And so if we can kind of expect it and go, oh, here it is, and maybe even plan for it. So planning for it might look like having a discussion way ahead of time to set like your child's expectations, like, okay, so we're going to go into Target. And I want to remind you, does mom buy impulse purchases at Target? Does she buy toys at Target when we don't have them on the list? No. Yeah, she doesn't. So what's going to happen if you are wanting something and you really want it? What should we do? Buy it. No, we're not going to buy it. Like, you're giving them emotional vaccination ahead of time. We're not going to buy it. What could we do? Could we take a photo of it with my phone? So we can remember that you want that thing. Talking about what's the game plan way ahead of time and normalizing, you might get really upset and it's okay to get upset. Mom's still not going to buy it. And we have to be ready to leave a lot of carts, a lot of unpurchased products, and a lot of failed, quote unquote, errands when we have a spicy one. And so knowing that you might be best served with having your stuff delivered when you can. Unfortunately, Trader Joe's here in California does not deliver, so I have to go there. But knowing that there are going to be times, and giving yourself permission ahead of time, like, if they start to freak out, I'm going to calmly and kindly and firmly leave. Or I'm going to allow them to cry and I'm going to practice my breathing. Because a lot of this is, we are growing our own tolerance for our child's upset and our body's telling us, this is not okay. We've got to stop this sound. And that's not effective parenting. So that was a lot. What are you taking from that?
Oh, those were such great tips. I really like how you said, who are you parenting for? Like, are you more concerned about what the people in the store are thinking about you, or, you know, helping just get your child regulated? And I have to say, when I do see parents struggling with, you know, difficult kids, like, I just try to smile at them and let them know that it's okay, it's fine. But when I see a parent responding in anger, or like the other day in Target, it was a dad, but he was swearing at his kid. to like, shut the F up. And I'm like, someone take that child from him. You shouldn't be allowed to take him home with you. Like, that just made me so sad and scared. And I know it was probably just a response of, you know, embarrassment, frustration, all of that. But
yeah, and let's, I wish we had like a sign that we could send, because I do, I start praying immediately for that mom. And I, sometimes I'll say, oh, shopping is so hard, isn't it? Like, but then that could be taken as condescending. So you never know what is needed from you from a stranger, usually nothing. But I guess I want, if you're listening to this, I want you to imagine the most compassionate person you know is watching this and parent for that person.
Yeah.
Knowing that, that the collective women that have gone before you and after you are holding space for how hard this is and how noble and sacred and beautiful it is. Don't worry about the one grandma with the pinched up face who said, in my day, I never, we can't parent for that person. They've forgotten, they, speaking of amnesia, they don't remember how hard this was. And they, anyway, just don't parent for that person.
Yeah. Such good advice. Okay. Michaela also wrote in, she has a 3.5-year-old who is throwing tantrums that she describes with absolute rage. And she says she's tried giving her more freedom and speaking kindly and speaking firmly and taking things away and rewarding and giving choices. And she's at her wit's end. So is this typical for a 3-year-old? What do you do if you feel like you've tried to be calm and firm and kind and you're not getting anywhere? Is it just you're in the long haul and just persevere? So
if you have a 3-year-old and they are a spicy one, which means they're like inflexible, intense, feel things strongly, highly sensitive, persistent, then yeah, it's totally normal. And if I was talking to that lady, I would ask her, what does it mean to work? Like you're saying it's not working. Does working mean they stop having these big feelings? They stop hitting? Like what? I think I would really want to define that. And I would want to encourage Michaela that your one job is to work on your own unflappable, grounded, sturdy sense of self so that whether your child is cooing and smiling at you or screaming, I hate you, you are still okay. Yeah. You are working on being that benevolent queen that says, no, 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 you may not hit me, but I'm so mad at you. I hear that. I hear you're mad. We're going to move into a smaller space now. Come on, come with me. I know you don't want to go. You're staying calm. This is a season and you can do so much by working on self-soothing and regulating and not, it sounds like you're jumping from maybe trying this to trying that. And there was something in the question about the disrespect is astronomical. A 3-year-old doesn't know what respect means.
Right.
That's sort of a non-concrete, what's that word? When it's a concept, conceptual, it's not black and white and touchable enough. So I like to not hold little children real responsible for how they behave once they have passed their threshold of tolerance and they're kind of out of the window of their right mind, right? Yeah. They're in their animal body. And so I wouldn't couch that as disrespect because that's just going to anger the parts of you. Instead, tell yourself, this child's having a hard time and so am I. I will be self-compassionate to both of us. Reframe it a little bit. You have a child that probably is overstimulated, needs less being dragged around from thing to thing, needs more downtime and quiet, and maybe needs their environment to be more simplified, like less is more with this child, but they may still need to be somebody. It's almost like when you get a new carpet and it's rolled up and then you open it up and it just has some off-gassing to do. It's just part of the journey is that there's going to be this plastic smell that comes off. There are some children who constantly have these like caviar dreams and a paper plate budget, and a 3-year-old has so many things they want to make happen, but they're not in charge. So allowing them to be upset a lot, like you just might have an Eeyore of a child, and you can mitigate that with some techniques like talking about the day, what's going to happen. Here's what the day includes, having it be very rhythmic and having transitions be really transparent and obvious and adding some rituals. It's when we get out of our kind of routine that the spicy one gets disappointed and wanting things and overwhelmed. And so taking a look at the environment and kind of what is the schedule of the day might also help this child.
Yeah. And I like that you called out, Michaela did mention that she feels like this is disrespectful behavior, but that's not, it has nothing to do with your child. That disrespect is something you're internalizing. You're making it about you. And so like, you got to let go of that. It's not disrespect. However, with a teenager, it does start to feel like disrespect. And this question from Sarah is about her 13-year-old. She says, I need tried and true calm down techniques for my almost 13-year-old. This boy feels all the feels, good, bad, happy, sad. When he gets upset about something, usually very minor things, it escalates very quickly to the point of being out of control with his emotions. When he was younger, we used to have a secret word that I would say that he would recognize as his cue that he needs to take a break and get his emotions in check. But he thinks that it's too juvenile now. Any ideas for us? I know you're the queen of teaching how to calm down. Can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Yes. And I also want to acknowledge that most of what we need to teach our children happens before age 12, which is kind of a depressing thing to hear. And the way we live our life will speak volumes, but in terms of their receptiveness to being trained and taught, a lot of children, when they reach adolescence, are no longer interested in that direct instruction. So it may be that, Sarah, you are not the person to be teaching him these things, but you have identified that he needs this. He needs help calming down. And that's pretty typical for a 13-year-old boy to be kind of feeling all these emotions and needing that physical outlet. So in general, I would say make sure this kid is moving through the world physically in some way. Is he on a team sport? Or can he go take karate or some martial art that helps him hone in and move that anger out of his body? I would want to ask Sarah, if she were here, how do you calm down? What's your process? And her modeling that, not directly saying this is how you do it, but just letting him catch her doing it, like, oh, I was so mad at a cashier today. I was so mad. So I took my thumb and my finger, and you know what I did? And he's like, what'd you do? I started pressing my thumb and my pointer finger, and then I pressed my thumb and my middle finger, and then I pressed my thumb and my ring finger, and I just went back and forth, and I started saying, God bless you, peace be with you, I love you. And I was just gritting my teeth, saying this to the cashier without using words. And I felt better. And then you walk away, and you have just dropped a little story of how you dealt with anger and how anger is normal. I didn't mention what the cashier did. Maybe they refused to take your credit card. I don't know. But finding ways to model how you deal with big feelings and normalizing that there's physical movement required for most bodies that are angry. We need to metabolize it. So some kind of controlled destruction. Is there a punching bag that can be hung out in the garage? Is there one of those inflatable guys you can kick and he falls over and stands back up? Is there egg cartons to rip up? Is there ice to throw? Like allowing something and then you doing it and kind of narrating your experience. I know some very sensitive and spicy 13-year-old boys that for a season, you know, many months, there was a lot of tears at bed as they were kind of unfurling all that had happened without being able to say it. And the anger, of course, is directed at the safest person who will sit with them. And so again, it's not personal, but it's hard when you aren't talking to the person, because I've done a lot of one-on-one coaching, is like parsing out what is the parent's discomfort with big feelings versus what is like, no, this is like de facto not okay what this kid is doing. So then what skills do we need to grow in that person? And a lot of that is by modeling them and ritualizing them. Like every day we take a walk after school, we move our body and you tell me one good thing and one bad thing about the day, or we don't talk about school at all. We name the states, you know, just ritualizing ways to move your body out of anger.
So the takeaway for me is how important it is or can be to be honest with our kids that we too struggle with big feelings. Like I got angry, you know, so often we want to put out like this perfect picture of like model, you know, what we want them to model after. But if we want them to help navigate some of the hard things, we have to be honest about how we go through that too. And that was such a great example.
Yeah. And all the research is showing that the more we can tolerate negative feelings, whether it's grief or disappointment or anger, the more access we get to the positive feelings. And that's what's great about the spicy one, is they feel things deeply. And of course, if they feel negative on a family trip, everybody feels negative because it's so contagious.
Yeah.
But if they feel happy, that's also very contagious. And that's just, that is actually a strength of the spicy one, as hard as it is to parent.
Yeah. So good. Okay. This comes from Nashua. She says, what do you do with the child who refuses to apologize? My daughter will not apologize at all. She's almost three, very smart, understands what she's done wrong, but I can tell her that she's not getting dessert or on timeout or has to take a nap or has to go to bed early, no special stuffed animal, no favorite blanket, nothing. She would rather just go to bed or back to timeout than apologize. Now, at first, I kind of laughed because it was just so ridiculous, but now I'm super annoyed and embarrassed because today she threw a toy at my sister and hurt her in the process and will not apologize. My sister doesn't care, but that's not the point. Help me. I feel like there's a lot to unpack here.
Oh my gosh, yes.
First of all, she's three, right? How do you feel about forcing a child to apologize in general?
It's just ineffective. It's ineffective. I understand what you're trying to teach them is a care for others and an integrity and a duty to repair what you've broken. But there's so many better ways than getting into a power struggle of trying to get your kid to say some magic words. And a forced apology is not an apology. We've all been on the receiving end of someone saying, sorry, I did that to you. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you don't feel any better. So what I would say, it's kind of awesome that Nashua already knows at three that the threats and the punishment doesn't work with this one, because you got yourself a spicy one. And they are very sensitive to shame. Like, their shame sensors are right next to just very hyper searching the environment for, am I wrong? And so it doesn't work, all this power struggles. Instead, let's see you model the apology or the repair for a while. And that looks like, oh, sister, I'm so sorry. And going over to the victim, if someone's been harmed, going to that person first. This is great for people who have siblings. Like, if your older brother hurts younger brother, you go to younger brother and say, are you okay? Ah, that looks like it hurts. And then this child, instead of forcing an apology, say, bring them in as a teammate and say, how can we make this right? How can we, should we go get ice for Auntie? Or should we go give her a hug? And if the kid is like, no, because they can tell that they've done something wrong and they don't want to be on display, then you go over and you give a hug and you say, I'm sorry, we're going to keep you safe, Auntie. We're not going to throw things at you. But there's probably a reason why she threw it. So I don't think forced apologies teach much but manipulation. So modeling it and asking, how can we make it better? How can we repair this?
When my kids were all younger, I instituted the do-over. You know, when I would see a child, you know, not be very nice, I'd be like, hey, let's just do that over again. And sometimes they would take me up on it and present, you know, in a better way. Sometimes they wouldn't. But I remember the day they called a do-over on me because I wasn't being my best self. Anyway, it just became a tool that we use in our family, because sometimes when emotions are high, we don't show up the best that we can, but you can repair it, whether it's a sincere apology or a do-over. Sometimes it takes time.
Yeah. And I think for that parent, like, kind of doing some self-reflection, why is it so important to me? Why am I in this power struggle? Why do I need this apology so bad? There's probably some really profound reasons underneath that that can be reached in other ways. Like in terms of, what skill am I trying to teach? And also, what am I trying, like, why do I need this so badly? Why do I need this person fresh out the womb to be contrite with me? Like, there's a little bit of a need for power and control there. And that's probably not a very popular thing to say.
Yeah. But no, it's important to, like, really reflect on, like, what is driving this reaction from me?
Yeah. I used to, my son was playing soccer. I used to get so triggered by him pulling away from me while I was trying to tie the cleats, and almost to the point where my body wanted to pinch him to, like, get him to, he had all this energy. He's seeing his friends out on the field and he's trying to run to them. And I'm feeling suddenly hot with a bit of rage and like I'm being disrespected. And so taking the time to reflect and be like, what is that? Like just being curious, not judgy, but what's actually happening here? Like if I looked at this like a movie, what am I noticing and what am I telling myself about this? Or what's happening in my body? What does this remind me of? Because it ended up that I was feeling ashamed that we were late. And I was thinking he's just going to make it later. And the pressure of unknotting something with everyone looking at me. And it was really about me. It wasn't about him. And so it's hard work, but that's part of what parenting offers us is to start doing that self-reflection to figure out what our triggers are. So we don't blame our kids.
Yeah. As you were telling that story, it reminded me of the first time I felt rage for an infant child. It's ridiculous, but she had an infection and she needed antibiotics. And I'm trying to give this baby the antibiotics the way the pediatrician taught me. And every time she would spit it out of my face. So she's not getting the medicine that she needs. It's all over the floor and all over me. And I just remember thinking, what is wrong with me? How can I be so mad at a baby? But I wasn't really mad at the baby. I was mad about the situation, right? Yes, and my daughter just had a baby and she's starting to get a little fussy. And I spent a week with her. And as I left, I said, I just want to leave you with this, that one day you might feel anger. You might feel even rage towards this beautiful, innocent, helpless thing that you love more than anything in the world. And that's okay. That's normal. It doesn't mean that it's a lot of emotions. And, you know, the whole postpartum thing also puts you in tumult. Mm-hmm. But I think just recognizing that anger is a normal emotion and it's okay to have anger.
And a lot of times underneath it is something like fear in your case. Yes. Like this
most times
not going to get well if I can't make this happen. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. One last question. At the end of the day, we want to have a beautiful bonded relationship with our children, right? That's what we want. And I think the fear, the anger that comes out of fear sometimes is because we don't think we're getting that. This was actually an anonymous question that was submitted. She says, has anyone had a difficult time bonding with one of their children? I'm struggling with my 4-year-old and have his whole life, but it's getting worse. He's an extremely angry, aggressive child, and I'm pretty sure he has ADHD, but trying to get the help that we need with that hasn't been easy. I'm just at a loss. I know motherhood is hard, but I don't feel like it should feel this hard every day. Mary.
This is my story. This is my story. This is how I would have spoke about my 4-year-old at the time. And so just like in any relationship, like a marriage, we can get so overwhelmed by the negative parts of it that we begin to kind of vociferate in it. We begin to ruminate on the bad and you know, we all have negative bias already. So I'm sure that there is a part of this kid that's like, wow, they are more handsy and more roughhousing and more dramatic and bigger feeling than maybe the neighbor next door. But I bet there's also so much beauty about this child. And I would want this parent to take this lack of liking their child right now, which happens, as a real cue that there's some serious work to be done. And I'll recommend my moms the spicy ones, because I would say a third of the moms that come in don't like their children in the beginning. Mm. And, you know, if you're not into taking classes, one thing I'll say is make sure to take captive your thoughts. Like notice what the story you're telling about this child. And you're going to have to consciously start to think about what is positive about this child. Now, often when you can't seem to think of what's positive about a child, there's a lot going on inside you about what you can't think about yourself, because we project a lot. The things that we don't like about ourselves, we definitely don't like in our child. So I would guess that this mom has tried very hard to not be angry or aggressive. And here's this kid doing it, right? So starting a list on your phone, as simple as once a day, I'm going to observe with compassionate detachment my child and just watch them and notice something that is delightful about them. And I'm going to write it down in a note in my phone, and I'm begin to create a list of what is beautiful about them. I'm going to ask other people who like this child what they like about them. I'm going to remind myself these things. And so spending time with these positive thoughts is really important.
Yeah. So I think sometimes we have expectations of how our child is going to behave or how they're going to turn out. I mean, I have mostly adult children and teenagers now, and especially with the adult children, it's like, wow, you really are nothing like me. You aren't doing anything that I thought you'd be doing right now. And that can become a problem to where you even wonder, you know, do I even like this person? We don't agree on anything. But if you strip away, I found this to be true in my life, if I strip away all of the expectations and just with curiosity, look at them and what they're experiencing and where, what's lighting them up and where they're going without bringing all of my baggage, it's such a better experience. And I feel closer to them because I don't have all those walls that I put up with like, well, you didn't do this and you're not doing this and you're not showing up like this. Yeah. So that's just a way of saying you're struggling with this as a 4-year-old. You'll probably be, you know, in the same place with a 24-year-old if you don't adjust right now, you know, the way you're thinking about it, your expectations. Yeah. And
another way to do that is like, you might be stuck in like in an environment, like maybe in your home right now, it just goes to chaos, or maybe there's stuff everywhere. And it just carving out a time a week where you can be in an environment that supports the two of you is important. Maybe that's going to a park once a week and you don't open your phone up, you put a blanket down and you just practice delighting in your child. What do I love about this child? So the questions you hold in your brain are going to be important. What do I love about this child versus what's he doing now? How's he ruining my life now? I mean, you got to really check the thoughts that you are working on, but creating some special one-on-one time, finding a thing that brings you both to laughter and that involves a lot of touch and silliness. Play is the way to connect with a child like this. And so I would encourage that as well on your journey to like your child.
So good. Mary, I feel like we could just keep going. There are so many more questions, but I know that you've created content and courses to help people. Tell us where our listeners can learn more about the classes and programs that you offer.
Yeah, just head on over to maryvangeffen.com, and that's driving van and then Geffen with a G-E-F-F-E-N. And I would recommend, if you're just kind of getting started on this journey, of taking Calm in the Chaos class. And that's a class that basically teaches you how to have a calm down recipe. What are the 4 elements that you kind of cling to when you feel your biometrics going up and you are feeling like you're starting to lose control? And so having a plan, I kind of walk you through how to create that plan. And if you're already like, no, I need a lot more help, then Moms of Spicy Ones comes back. It's twice a year. And I coach every week, twice a day. And there's all this curriculum in there that's slowly parsed out over the 8 weeks. And that comes back in March.
Okay. And follow her on Instagram too, guys. She is such a fun follow. I loved the stories that you did of the, it was like an acapella retreat. You were singing and I'm a singer. So I was like, wait, where is she? I want to do this. I want to lay on the floor and create a sound bath of our voices. Yeah. Go follow her on Instagram.
Stories are my favorite part of Instagram, where you can just say what you're doing in the background, right?
And just be yourself. You have a big personality and we're so grateful that you lent your expertise to our community here. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Vanessa.
I am so grateful that Mary agreed to be on the podcast. Parenting can feel so lonely at times, especially when dealing with spicy ones. I hope this reminded you that we are all in this together. We all have good days and bad ones, and we can support each other on our parenting journeys. Mary's next Spicy Ones course starts in March, and we have a link to the waiting list in the show notes. Thanks for being here and for being part of the MomForce community. I'd love to continue this conversation over on my Instagram account at Vanessa Quigley. I want to hear if you have a spicy one and what you thought of Mary's advice. Oh, and before you go, if you could rate and review the podcast, that would be so helpful to our team. Thanks, and see you next time.